With Upali, Part 1, translated by Bhikkhu Sajjato. At one time, the Buddha was staying near Sarvati in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's monastery. Then the householder, Anathapindika, went up to the Buddha, bowed and sat down to one side. Seated to one side, the Buddha said to the householder, Anathapindika, "These 10 pleasure seekers are found in the world." "What 10?" "First, a pleasure seeker seeks wealth using illegitimate, coercive means. They don't make themselves happy and pleased, nor share it and make merit. Next, a pleasure seeker seeks wealth using illegitimate, coercive means. They make themselves happy and pleased, but don't share it and make merit. Next, a pleasure seeker seeks wealth using illegitimate, coercive means. They make themselves happy and pleased, and they share it and make merit. Next, a pleasure seeker seeks wealth using means both legitimate and illegitimate, and coercive and non-coercive. They don't make themselves happy and pleased, nor share it and make merit. Next, a pleasure seeker seeks wealth using means both legitimate and illegitimate, and coercive and non-coercive. They make themselves happy and pleased, but don't share it and make merit. Next, a pleasure seeker seeks wealth using means both legitimate and illegitimate, and coercive and non-coercive. They make themselves happy and pleased, and they share it and make merit. Next, a pleasure seeker seeks wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means. They don't make themselves happy and pleased, nor share it and make merit. Next, a pleasure seeker seeks wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means. They make themselves happy and pleased, but don't share it and make merit. Next, a pleasure seeker seeks wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means. They make themselves happy and pleased, and they share it and make merit. But they enjoy that wealth, tied, infatuated, attached, blind to the drawbacks, and not understanding the escape. Next, a pleasure seeker seeks wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means. They make themselves happy and pleased, and they share it and make merit. And they enjoy that wealth untied, uninfatuated, unattached, seeing the drawbacks and understanding the escape. Now consider the pleasure seeker who seeks wealth using illegitimate, coercive means and who doesn't make themselves happy and pleased, nor share it and make merit. They may be criticized on 3 grounds. They seek for wealth using illegitimate, coercive means. This is the first ground for criticism. They don't make themselves happy and pleased. This is the second ground for criticism. They don't share it and make merit. This is the third ground for criticism. This pleasure seeker may be criticized on these 3 grounds. Now consider the pleasure seeker who seeks wealth using illegitimate, coercive means and who makes themselves happy and pleased, but doesn't share it and make merit. They may be criticized on 2 grounds and praised on 1. They seek for wealth using illegitimate, coercive means. This is the first ground for criticism. They make themselves happy and pleased. This is the 1 ground for praise. They don't share it and make merit. This is the 2nd ground for criticism. This pleasure seeker may be criticized on these 2 grounds and praised on this 1. Now consider the pleasure seeker who seeks wealth using illegitimate, coercive means and who makes themselves happy and pleased and shares it and makes merit. They may be criticized on 1 ground and praised on 2. They seek for wealth using illegitimate, coercive means. This is the 1 ground for criticism. They make themselves happy and pleased. This is the 1st ground for praise. They share it and make merit. This is the 2nd ground for praise. This pleasure seeker may be criticized on this one ground and praised on these two. Now consider the pleasure seeker who seeks wealth using means both legitimate and illegitimate, and coercive and non-coercive, and who doesn't make themselves happy and pleased, nor share it and make merit. They may be praised on one ground and criticized on three. They seek for wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means. This is the one ground for praise. They seek for wealth using illegitimate, coercive means. This is the first ground for criticism. They don't make themselves happy and pleased. This is the second ground for criticism. They don't share it and make merit. This is the third ground for criticism. This pleasure seeker may be praised on this one ground and criticized on these three. Now consider the pleasure seeker who seeks wealth using means both legitimate and illegitimate, and coercive and non-coercive, and who makes themselves happy and pleased, but doesn't share it and make merit. They may be praised on two grounds and criticized on two. They seek for wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means. This is the first ground for praise. They seek for wealth using illegitimate, coercive means. This is the first ground for criticism. They make themselves happy and pleased. This is the second ground for praise. They don't share it and make merit. This is the second ground for criticism. This pleasure seeker may be praised on these two grounds and criticized on these two. Now consider the pleasure seeker who seeks wealth using means both legitimate and illegitimate, and coercive and non-coercive, and who makes themselves happy and pleased and shares it and makes merit. They may be praised on three grounds and criticized on one. They seek for wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means. This is the first ground for praise. They seek for wealth using illegitimate, coercive means. This is the one ground for criticism. They make themselves happy and pleased. This is the second ground for praise. They share it and make merit. This is the third ground for praise. This pleasure seeker may be praised on these three grounds and criticized on this one. Now consider the pleasure seeker who seeks wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means, and who doesn't make themselves happy and pleased, nor share it and make merit. They may be praised on one ground and criticized on two. They seek for wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means. This is the one ground for praise. They don't make themselves happy and pleased. This is the first ground for criticism. They don't share it and make merit. This is the second ground for criticism. This pleasure seeker may be praised on this one ground and criticized on these two. Now consider the pleasure seeker who seeks wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means, and who makes themselves happy and pleased, but doesn't share it and make merit. They may be praised on two grounds and criticized on one. They seek for wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means. This is the first ground for praise. They make themselves happy and pleased. This is the second ground for praise. They don't share it and make merit. This is the one ground for criticism. This pleasure seeker may be praised on these two grounds and criticized on this one. Now consider the pleasure seeker who seeks wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means, and who makes themselves happy and pleased, and shares it, and makes merit. But they enjoy that wealth tied, infatuated, attached, blind to the drawbacks, and not understanding the escape. They may be praised on three grounds and criticized on one. They seek for wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means. This is the first ground for praise. They make themselves happy and pleased. This is the second ground for praise. They share it and make merit. This is the third ground for praise. They enjoy that wealth tied, infatuated, attached, blind to the drawbacks and not understanding that escape. This is the one ground for criticism. This pleasure seeker may be praised on these three grounds and criticized on this one. Now consider the pleasure seeker who seeks wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means, and who makes themselves happy and pleased, and shares it, and makes merit, and they enjoy that wealth untied, uninfatuated, unattached, seeing the drawbacks and understanding the escape. They may be praised on four grounds. They seek for wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means. This is the first ground for praise. They make themselves happy and pleased. This is the second ground for praise. They share it and make merit. This is the third ground for praise. They enjoy that wealth untied, uninfatuated, unattached, seeing the drawbacks and understanding the escape. This is the fourth ground for praise. This pleasure seeker may be praised on these four grounds. These are the 10 pleasure seekers found in the world. The pleasure seeker who seeks wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means, who makes themselves happy and pleased, and shares it and makes merit, and who uses that wealth untied, uninfatuated, unattached, seeing the drawbacks, and understanding the escape, is the foremost, best, chief, highest, and finest of the 10. From a cow comes milk, from milk comes curds, from curds come butter, from butter comes ghee, and from ghee comes cream of ghee. And the cream of ghee is said to be the best of these. In the same way, the pleasure seeker who seeks wealth using legitimate, non-coercive means, and who makes themselves happy and pleased, and shares it, and makes merit, and who uses that wealth untied, uninfatuated, unattached, seeing the drawbacks, and understanding the escape, is the foremost, best, chief, highest, and finest of the 10. Dangers. Then the householder and Artapindika went up to the Buddha, bowed, and sat down to one side. The Buddha said to him, "Householder, when a noble disciple has quelled 5 fears and enmities, possesses the 4 factors of stream entry, and has clearly seen and penetrated the noble system with wisdom, they may, if they wish, declare of themselves, 'I've finished with rebirth in hell, the animal realm, and the ghost realm. I've finished with all places of loss, bad places, the underworld. I am a stream enterer. I'm not liable to be reborn in the underworld, and I'm bound for awakening.' What are the 5 fears and enmities they have quelled? Anyone who kills living creatures, brims with fear and enmity, both in this life and in lives to come, and experiences mental pain and sadness. Anyone who refrains from killing living creatures does not brim with fear and enmity, either in this life or in lives to come, and doesn't experience mental pain and sadness. So that fear and enmity is quelled for anyone who refrains from killing living creatures. Anyone who steals, brims with fear and enmity, both in this life and in lives to come, and experiences mental pain and sadness. Anyone who refrains from stealing does not brim with fear and enmity, either in this life or in lives to come, and doesn't experience mental pain and sadness. So that fear and enmity is quelled for anyone who refrains from stealing. Anyone who commits sexual misconduct, brims with fear and enmity, both in this life and in lives to come, and experiences mental pain and sadness. Anyone who refrains from sexual misconduct does not brim with fear and enmity, either in this life or in lives to come, and doesn't experience mental pain and sadness. So that fear and enmity is quelled for anyone who refrains from sexual misconduct. Anyone who lies, brims with fear and enmity both in this life and in lives to come, and experiences mental pain and sadness. Anyone who refrains from lying does not brim with fear and enmity either in this life or in lives to come, and doesn't experience mental pain and sadness. So that fear and enmity is quelled for anyone who refrains from lying. Anyone who consumes beer, wine, and liquor intoxicants brims with fear and enmity both in this life and in lives to come, and experiences mental pain and sadness. Anyone who refrains from consuming beer, wine, and liquor intoxicants does not brim with fear and enmity either in this life or in lives to come, and doesn't experience mental pain and sadness. So that fear and enmity is quelled for anyone who refrains from consuming beer, wine, and liquor intoxicants. These are the five fears and enmities they have quelled. What are the four factors of stream entry that they possess? It's when a noble disciple has experiential confidence in the Buddha. That blessed one is perfected, a fully awakened Buddha, accomplished in knowledge and conduct, holy, knower of the world, supreme guide for those fit for training, teacher of gods and humans, awakened, blessed. They have experiential confidence in the teaching. The teaching is well explained by the Buddha, apparent in the present life, immediately effective, inviting inspection, relevant, so that sensible people can know it for themselves. They have experiential confidence in the Sangha. The Sangha of the Buddha's disciples is practicing the way that's good, direct, systematic, and proper. It consists of the four pairs, the eight individual persons. This is the Sangha of the Buddha's disciples that is worthy of offerings dedicated to the gods, worthy of hospitality, worthy of a religious donation, worthy of greeting with joined palms, and is the supreme field of merit for the world. And a noble disciple's ethical conduct is loved by the noble ones, unbroken, impeccable, spotless, and unmarred, liberating, praised by sensible people, not mistaken, and leading to immersion. These are the four factors of stream entry that they possess. And what is the noble system that they have clearly seen and penetrated with wisdom? It's when a noble disciple reflects, when this exists, this comes to be. Due to the arising of this, this arises. When this doesn't exist, this doesn't come to be. Due to the cessation of this, this ceases. That is, ignorance is a requirement for choices. Choices are a requirement for consciousness. Consciousness is a requirement for name and form. Name and form are requirements for the six sense fields. The six sense fields are requirements for contact. Contact is a requirement for feeling. Feeling is a requirement for craving. Craving is a requirement for grasping. Grasping is a requirement for continued existence. Continued existence is a requirement for rebirth. Rebirth is a requirement for old age and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, sadness, and distress to come to be. That is how this entire mass of suffering originates. When ignorance fades away and ceases with nothing left over, choices cease. When choices cease, consciousness ceases. When consciousness ceases, name and form cease. When name and form cease, the six sense fields cease. When the six sense fields cease, contact ceases. When contact ceases, feeling ceases. When feeling ceases, craving ceases. When craving ceases, grasping ceases. When grasping ceases, continued existence ceases. When continued existence ceases, rebirth ceases. When rebirth ceases, old age and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, sadness, and distress cease. That is how this entire mass of suffering ceases. This is the noble system that they have clearly seen and penetrated with wisdom. When a noble disciple has quelled five fears and enmities, possesses the four factors of stream entry, and has clearly seen and comprehended the noble cycle with wisdom, they may, if they wish, declare of themselves, I've finished with rebirth in hell, the animal realm, and the ghost realm. I've finished with all places of loss, bad places, the underworld. I am a stream enterer. I'm not liable to be reborn in the underworld, and am bound for awakening. What is your view? At one time, the Buddha was staying near Sarvati in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's monastery. Then the householder Anathapindika left Sarvati in the middle of the day to see the Buddha. Then it occurred to him, it's the wrong time to see the Buddha as he's in retreat, and it's the wrong time to see the esteemed mendicants as they're in retreat. Why don't I visit the monastery of the wanderers of other religions? Then he went to the monastery of the wanderers of other religions. Now at that time, the wanderers of other religions had come together, making an uproar, a colossal racket, as they sat and talked about all kinds of low topics. They saw Anathapindika coming off in the distance and stopped each other, saying, "Be quiet, good fellows, don't make a sound. The householder Anathapindika, a disciple of the ascetic Gotama, is coming to our monastery. He is included among the white-clothed lay disciples of the ascetic Gotama, who is residing in Sarvati. Such venerables, like the quiet, are educated to be quiet and praise the quiet. Hopefully, if he sees that our assembly is quiet, he'll see fit to approach." Then those wanderers of other religions fell silent. Then Anathapindika went up to them and exchanged greetings with those wanderers. When the greetings and polite conversation were over, he sat down to one side. The wanderers said to him, "Tell us, householder, what is the view of the ascetic Gotama?"
"Sirs, I don't know all his views."
"Well then, since it seems you don't know all the views of the ascetic Gotama, tell us, what are the views of the mendicants?"
"Sirs, I don't know all the mendicants' views."
"Well then, since it seems you don't know all the views of the ascetic Gotama or of the mendicants, tell us, householder, what is your view?"
"Sirs, it's not hard for me to explain what my views are, but please, let the venerables explain their own convictions first. Afterwards, it won't be hard for me to explain my views."
When he said this, one of the wanderers said to him, "The cosmos is eternal. This is the only truth. Anything else is futile. That's my view, householder."
Another wanderer said, "The cosmos is not eternal. This is the only truth. Anything else is futile. That's my view, householder."
Another wanderer said, "The cosmos is finite. The cosmos is infinite. The soul and the body are one and the same. The soul is one thing, the body another. A realized one still exists after death. A realized one no longer exists after death. A realized one both still exists and no longer exists after death. A realized one neither exists nor doesn't exist after death. This is the only truth. Anything else is futile. That's my view, householder."
When this was said, Anathapindika said this, "Sirs, regarding the venerable who said this, the cosmos is eternal, this is the only truth, anything else is futile, that's my view, householder. This view of his has either arisen from his own irrational application of mind, or is conditioned by what someone else says. But that view is created, conditioned, chosen, dependently originated. Whatever is created, conditioned, chosen, and dependently originated is impermanent. And what's impermanent is suffering. What he clings to and holds to is just suffering. Regarding the venerable who said this, the cosmos is not eternal. This is the only truth. Anything else is futile. That's my view, householder. This view of his has either arisen from his own irrational application of mind, or is conditioned by what someone else says. But that view is created, conditioned, chosen, dependently originated. Whatever is created, conditioned, chosen, and dependently originated is impermanent. And what's impermanent is suffering. What he clings to and holds to is just suffering. Regarding the Venerable who said this, the cosmos is finite, the cosmos is infinite, the soul and the body are one and the same, the soul is one thing, the body another, a realized one still exists after death, a realized one no longer exists after death, a realized one both still exists and no longer exists after death, a realized one neither exists nor doesn't exist after death. This is the only truth. Anything else is futile. That's my view, householder. This view of his has either arisen from his own irrational application of mind or is conditioned by what someone else says. But that view is created, conditioned, chosen, dependently originated. Whatever is created, conditioned, chosen, and dependently originated is impermanent. And what's impermanent is suffering. What he clings to and holds to is just suffering. When he said this, the wanderers said to him, Householder, we've each explained our own convictions. Tell us, householder, what is your view? Sirs, whatever is created, conditioned, chosen, and dependently originated is impermanent. And what's impermanent is suffering. And what's suffering is not mine. I am not this. This is not myself. That's my view, sirs. Householder, whatever is created, conditioned, chosen, and dependently originated is impermanent, and what's impermanent is suffering. What you cling to and hold to is just suffering. Sirs, whatever is created, conditioned, chosen, and dependently originated is impermanent, and what's impermanent is suffering. And I've truly seen clearly with right wisdom that what's suffering is not mine. I am not this. It's not myself, and I truly understand the escape beyond that. When this was said, those wanderers sat silent, dismayed, shoulders drooping, downcast, depressed, with nothing to say. Seeing this, Anathapindika got up from his seat. He went to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side, and informed the Buddha of all they had discussed. Good, good, householder. That's how you should legitimately and completely refute those futile men from time to time. Then the Buddha, educated, encouraged, fired up, and inspired the householder Anathapindika with a Dhamma talk, after which Anathapindika got up from his seat, bowed, and respectfully circled the Buddha before leaving. Then, not long after Anathapindika had left, the Buddha addressed the mendicants. Mendicants, even a mendicant who has ordained for 100 years in this teaching and training would legitimately and completely refute those wanderers of other religions, just as the householder Anathapindika did. With Waji Yamahita. At one time the Buddha was staying near Kampa on the banks of the Gagara lotus pond. Then the householder, Waji Yamahita, left Sabati in the middle of the day to see the Buddha. Then it occurred to him, it's the wrong time to see the Buddha as he's in retreat, and it's the wrong time to see the esteemed mendicants as they're in retreat. Why don't I visit the monastery of the wanderers of other religions? Then he went to the monastery of the wanderers of other religions. Now at that time the wanderers of other religions had come together, making an uproar, a colossal racket, and they sat and talked about all kinds of low topics. They saw Waji Yamahita coming off in the distance and stopped each other, saying, "Be quiet, good fellows, don't make a sound." The householder, Waji Yamahita, a disciple of the ascetic Gotama, is coming into our monastery. He is included among the white-clothed lay disciples of the ascetic Gotama, who is residing near Kampa. Such venerables like the quiet, are educated to be quiet, and praise the quiet. Hopefully, if he sees that our assembly is quiet, he'll see fit to approach. Then those wanderers of other religions fell silent. Then Waji Yamahita went up to them and exchanged greetings with the wanderers there. When the greetings and polite conversation were over, he sat down to one side. The wanderers said to him, "Is it really true, householder? Does the ascetic Gotama criticize all forms of mortification? Does he categorically condemn and denounce those fervent mortifiers who live rough?" "No, sirs. The Buddha does not criticize all forms of mortification, nor does he categorically condemn and denounce those fervent mortifiers who live rough. The Buddha criticizes where it is due, and praises where it is due. In doing so, he is one who speaks after analyzing the question, and is not one-sided on this point." When he said this, one of the wanderers said to him, "Hold on, householder. That ascetic Gotama, who you praise, is an exterminator who refrains from making statements. On this point also, I reasonably respond to the venerables. The Buddha has stated, this is skillful, and this is unskillful. So when it comes to what is skillful and unskillful, the Buddha makes a statement. He is not an exterminator who refrains from making statements." When this was said, those wanderers sat silent, dismayed, shoulders drooping, downcast, depressed, with nothing to say. Seeing this, Waji Yamahita got up from his seat. He went to the Buddha, bowed, sat down to one side, and informed the Buddha of all they had discussed. "Good, good, householder. That's how you should legitimately and completely refute those futile men from time to time. Householder, I don't say that all mortifications should be undergone, but I don't say that no mortifications should be undergone. I don't say that all observances should be undertaken, but I don't say that no observances should be undertaken. I don't say that all efforts should be tried, but I don't say that no efforts should be tried. I don't say that everything should be given up, but I don't say that nothing should be given up. I don't say that you should be liberated with all kinds of freedom, but I don't say that you should not be liberated with any kind of freedom. When undergoing certain mortifications, unskillful qualities grow while skillful qualities decline. I say that you shouldn't undergo those mortifications. When undergoing certain mortifications, unskillful qualities decline while skillful qualities grow. I say that you should undergo those mortifications. When undertaking certain observances, unskillful qualities grow while skillful qualities decline. I say that you shouldn't undertake those observances. When undertaking certain observances, unskillful qualities decline while skillful qualities grow. I say that you should undertake those observances. When trying certain efforts, unskillful qualities grow while skillful qualities decline. I say that you shouldn't try those efforts. When trying certain efforts, unskillful qualities decline while skillful qualities grow. I say that you should try those efforts. When giving up certain things, unskillful qualities grow while skillful qualities decline. I say that you shouldn't give up those things. When giving up certain things, unskillful qualities decline while skillful qualities grow. I say that you should give up those things. When being liberated with certain kinds of freedom, unskillful qualities grow while skillful qualities decline. I say that you shouldn't be liberated with those kinds of freedom. When being liberated with certain kinds of freedom, unskillful qualities decline while skillful qualities grow. I say that you should be liberated with those kinds of freedom. After Waji Yamahita had been educated, encouraged, fired up, and inspired with a Dhamma talk by the Buddha, he got up from his seat, bowed, and respectfully circled the Buddha before leaving. Then, not long after Waji Yamahita had left, the Buddha addressed the mendicants. "Mendicants, even a mendicant who for a long time has had little dust in their eye, in this teaching and training, would legitimately and completely refute those wanderers of other religions, just as the householder Waji Yamahita did."